You're listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast.
We're very serious crafters,
and we craft very serious crafts.
Very serious. Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of the Very Serious Crafts podcast. I'm Haley from Red Handled Scissors.
Heidi here from Hands Occupied.
And this is Molly from Wild Olive. Today we're discussing our creative dads, crafty inheritances, and the random things we tend to chat about in each episode. Wow, I'm already like going off and talking weird, which is actually ironic given what we've just been discussing before we got started here.
It's true. You may have noticed that all of us have slightly Midwestern accents. Well, we just went down that particular rabbit hole right before hitting record, so we'll spare you, but...
Before we get too far, we'd love to hear from you, and one great way to do that is through social media. Good places to find us online are the Very Serious Crafts Facebook group, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, regular Facebook page. Gosh, am I forgetting anything else, ladies?
Our website.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good one. VerySeriousCrafts.com. But yeah, with the social part of all that in mind, what's happening with you ladies this week?
Well, today I've been... Actually, it feels like this was in perfect timing with some of the things we were planning on talking about today. I've been doing some sewing for my dad, making a Father's Day gift for him, which is also, it's a project that I'm working on for an assignment. So I'm not sure that it counts as a real, you know, it's not going above and beyond for a dad project. I'll probably make him pose wearing it before it's actually Father's Day, but he'll have to just
deal with it. Counts.
Yeah, it counts.
Yeah. I chose the fabric. I'm making an apron, like a barbecue apron, by the way. But I chose the fabric knowing that he would find it fun. So that was important. And you may hear him in the background because he's especially loud today. He's always loud. He has a voice that just carries. And he's been working outside, and I could hear him outside. All the windows are closed, but you can still hear him in the background. Sorry about that.
That's funny.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sure my cat will meow.
Exactly.
It's a thing.
Yeah, cats, well, dads, it's all good. How about you?
With any luck, stupid Woodrow won't freak out like he did in episode 3 and do all the barking at every person who walks by the house.
That was pretty cute, though.
I hope so.
It was.
But I thought so.
This weekend, my dogs, speaking of them, they were a little bit neglected because in my planner, which I'm looking at right now, it says in all caps for Saturday and Sunday of last weekend, solo sewing party.
Nice.
Because I knew that unless I fully embraced Me Made May and just made myself set aside an entire like 12-hour session 2 days in a row to just sit down with my machine and my fabric scissors and just make it happen. If I didn't make Me Made May happen, it wasn't gonna. So I'm making progress.
It was so much fun to watch your Instagram stories popping up with little bits along the way. It was good.
Thanks.
Yes, I was so excited. I was like, ah, Heidi's sewing things. And then I got jealous because I wasn't sewing things.
Yeah. The fabric, I went to Joann's because I had a fat stack of Joann's coops, as I told my husband as I walked out of the house.
Nice.
Most of them were still good coops. and they have a line of 1930s fabrics. And I was like, it took all of my reserves and my like best resilience not to just buy every single one of them. But I did buy 4.
That's pretty good.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know that I could have resisted. So you are a stronger woman than I. Well, speaking of sewing things and being very excited, I just received a sewing pattern in the mail. Like, I opened it and put it on my work table right before I talked to you guys. That is a button-down shirt, just, you know, a normal button-down shirt with a collar. but it comes in cup sizes.
Woo!
And I am so excited. I just, like, there's every possibility that I'm going to have a wearable muslin. That never happens.
Nice.
Because, you know, I have to find out where the pattern doesn't work for me. But this pattern might work for me. And I'm just, I'm overwhelmed with glee. And I, of course, now cannot think of the name of the person who wrote the pattern, because actually I'm going to turn around right now and look so I can give them a shout out, because I'm so excited.
All right. All right, she's reaching. Oh, she's got it. Okay, oh, good.
I got it. Liesel and Company, which I think is part of the same pattern company that does really cute children's patterns. And now I can't think of their name either. Anyway, I'll put it in the show notes. But Liesel and Co. definitely does cup size patterns. So
I'll have to
take note, ladies.
Yeah. Does the pattern, does the top also kind of angle out over the hips?
It looks like it. It's got, yeah, it's definitely lady shaped. It's not straight up and down.
Awesome.
And I think it's got a little bit of, like a curved hem. So it comes up a little bit higher at the waist, or at the hip on each side where the pants seams would be. So anyway, I think it's going to be super cute and also might possibly fit me. And that's awesome. Without, like, the safety pins that I usually have to add to reinforce all of my buttons.
Yeah.
So anyway, real excited.
Victory.
And yeah. And, you know, I could talk about this for maybe hours. So instead, why don't we talk to Molly about puppet making?
Yeah. I feel like I always get the weird topics, which is my own fault, obviously, because I've got, like, not normal, quote, normal stuff going on in my life or in my family's life. But anyway, yeah, so since this episode's being recorded for posting just after Father's Day, we thought having a few dad-related things would be kind of fun, since we all have dads who like doing some creative things. Some maybe more traditional, and some a little bit out there. Everyone points at Molly. Actually, so my dad was an art major in school. He likes to point out that his dad was a Marine. So art major in the 60s with a Marine dad was not really well received at the time.
Interesting.
But he went with it. So that was kind of cool. He did theater stuff, and he used to sew costumes for things. This is very, you know, comfortable doing those things. But
that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's, which sometimes I will say, because he has a certain amount of knowledge about these things, he's very comfortable advising me on my own projects, which is a mixed bag, you know. It's okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Half the time is too late anyway, and so I just have to nod and smile. I love you, Dad. Anyway.
Aw, Dads.
But he has made quite a few puppets over the years, and so I've gotten to see him do that. And one of my favorite stories was he made these animal puppets, and it was for a church nativity program. So they had all these adorable puppets. And see, I'm talking about animals, and there's Woodrow.
I was going to say, who's animals?
I think I'm being about to be robbed. I think I might. Sorry, Molly.
Oh my gosh.
Go check your dogs.
Yeah, I'll be back. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh my goodness. Well, there's some excitement in the middle of the podcast.
Oh, indeed.
We have all of these witnesses listening to this happening now.
Oh my goodness. I hope she's not being robbed.
I know.
And that the dogs are just excited.
Heidi, are you okay?
Hi.
Hi. Okay.
Hi. So you seem to be alive. I guess you didn't get robbed.
No, I did not. sorry. I jinxed it by talking about it. Apparently. Well. Yeah, I think somebody, one of my neighbors must have just been walking near my back door.
Heidi didn't die. She looks okay. So yeah. So onward with paint. Puppets.
Yeah, okay, so puppets. Yeah,
sorry.
No, we're all good. I live in a big family and there's always weird things going on. This doesn't throw me off by any means. I could have just started up right where we were. Yeah, so my dad made these nativity animal puppets, and most of the time when he makes puppets, he makes them, constructs them out of foam, and then, you know, joins pieces, glues them all together. Kind of Muppet style puppets. Big, beautiful things with nice shape. In fact, I was going to mention, Abby Glassenberg recently released a puppet pattern similar style to the kinds of things that my dad would make. Although he hasn't made one in a while now, but he didn't necessarily always sew the outsides. He would use foam and paint and cover it in different ways. But anyway, made all of these beautiful puppets and used them for the production, decided, what are we going to use these animals? I think it maybe even went by like a couple of years. What are we going to use all these animal puppets for? Let's donate them, get rid of them, whatever. They may have even started to fall apart if they were stored improperly. And a friend of ours came and said, oh, I loved all those animal puppets you made. We'd like to use them for our nativity production. Could we borrow them? And so he had to go through and make all of them all over again because he was that sweet to not. He didn't just say, aww. Oh, they're all gone. Sorry. He made all of the animal puppets again. So I remember this summer, like week in the summer where the whole back patio was covered in puppet making supplies. Yeah, always making puppets. And then he helped someone else make one that they actually molded. They sculpted a face out of clay, made a mold with that clay sculpture, and then they filled the mold with this cool, soft, expandable foam that it was like a chemical mixture. They were doing like the whole, you know, combining ingredients. Wow. It was chemistry. And then they sewed part of it to attach to that. It's really cool stuff. And because of his interests, I've been able to like sit in on some puppet making classes. It's really interesting things, different kinds of materials and yeah, fun stuff. But that's my dad, the puppet maker.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I bet. What's your dad's name, Molly?
Ken. Ken Johansson.
Ken. Yay. Shout out to Ken.
Yeah.
I feel like Ken would be really good potentially at cosplay if he's doing that kind of fabrication work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, one year. Did you guys ever watch the show Powerpuff Girls? Yeah. You're familiar with it?
Yes.
One year, my sister and I and her friend went as the Powerpuff Girls, and then we got my little brother, who actually has helped us set up the podcast, we got him to be Mojo Jojo, which is great. We all still love doing Mojo Jojo voices, but my dad made this amazing like sculpted foam helmet hat thing, so it was all stacked up and it had little, you know, stripes on it and everything. Same kind of a thing. It was cosplay.
That's cool.
It was Halloween cosplay.
That's so awesome. I really need to get into cosplay. I mean, like I need a hole in my head, but I still am fascinated by it.
Oh, yes. I do a little bit, and I could go so far down that rabbit hole, which is why I'm not allowed.
Okay.
Yeah. My TARDIS dress is about the limit of what I'm allowed to do.
Yeah.
That is a good one, though.
Oh, boy.
Well, I've got another dad story to share in this episode.
Okay.
My dad, his name is Tom. Shout out to Tom. my dad is a very Norwegian looking man. I mean, if anyone who's seen my face should not be surprised by this. He's 6'4", blonde hair, blue eyes, and as he approaches 60, he's getting like he's like thinning out, and so he's just turning into this puppet like human. Sorry, Dad. Sorry to roast you there. But before my dad was approaching 60 in his younger days, He did something kind of insane from a crafting making perspective. So he bought himself some land on a lake, as all good Norwegian Minnesotan men do, because the dream is to live in a cabin on a lake where they can ice fish in the winter, lake fish in the summer, and have like pretty easy access to hunting territory any other time they need to procure food. And so my dad bought that land, and he had it for a little while. And he decided to build a Lincoln log style cabin on the land. And so I have a ton of memories and tons of photos and documentation of this whole process, because it happened throughout my entire early childhood up until I was about like 0 to 8. But here's where it gets interesting. So when you make a Lincoln log style cabin, normally you have to like either like be an actual woodsman and like go chop down trees with a hacksaw and a friend and then like strip the bark and like do all the pilgrimy things that you would do. I know nothing about woodworking, obviously.
Pilgrimy things. I like it.
The yeah. Pilgrimy things.
I hope I haven't offended any pilgrims in the audience.
I mean, I don't think they did so well at that. I think that was part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, I think my dad was a beneficiary of all the lessons they learned the hard way.
Okay, fair.
Anyway, so Tom, he and his dad, my grandpa Russell, my dad grew up on a farm, and they had this old farming truck. So when he was in college, I believe it was, there was an extra strong ice storm that hit Minnesota, and it was so strong, even for Minnesota winter standards, that the utility poles in their area where they lived snapped off at the ground level. And these were old utility poles, so they were 100% cedar. So that means the only part of the wood that had been treated with creosote, which is toxic and you can't, like, build a home with it, the only part that was toxic was busted off and stuck in the ground. And so the state, in an effort to, I guess, be frugal and, like, speed up cleanup efforts so they could replace all these poles, they told people, like, if you got a truck, you can have whatever you can haul. So my dad and my grandpa drove around Minnesota and picked up all of these cedar utility poles, which were already close to ready to go for doing something like making a Lincoln log style cabin.
Nice.
So
cool.
My dad had a whole stash of these things, and between he and my grandpa, they built, in total, they built three different lake cabins that were Lincoln log style. And they like improved each time.
Wow.
And then they also built my grandpa a wood shop with the last of these logs. So they notched them. They kind of had like a life-size Lincoln log set, because that's what you do to make sure you have all the pieces you need to build the structure. Mm-hmm. And then when they were ready and the foundation was ready, they built the actual like Lincoln log house. So inside the house was curved logs stacked on top of each other. And so my whole childhood was like camping out at this building site every weekend while my dad worked on this. And then once the house was physically built on the outside, we'd stay there every weekend while my dad and my grandpa and my mom and everybody worked on finishing it. So there's a ton of really great memories there, and some really cool photos of my dad and my grandpa working on it. And there's actually a picture of me wearing a sundress with matching like bloomers. And I'm sitting in like a wide V, almost splits seat, like those weird flexible positions only kids get into for relaxation. And I'm sitting there like in this unfinished cabin in a split, hammering just a random nail into a board, because my dad was like, oh, Heidi needs something to do, she's driving nuts, and I need to work with power tools. And so there's photos of all of this. I'll have to gather some of those for the show notes for this, because it's a super super cool thing that he did.
That's really cool.
Yeah, he would have been doing this like in mostly in his like 20s and 30s. So he would have been our age when he did this. And that's no small feat.
Yeah.
And then when I was 8 and the cabin was done, they sold it, and then they bought a house so we could so we moved into a nicer elementary school area, and they still live in that house today. So, yeah,
Wow, all that work and then they sold it? I just...
Right?
Oh. Yeah. But yeah. Also fair enough. Yeah.
They don't own any of the cabins they built at this point.
Oh, so sad. That's yeah. kind of sad, but also kind of great that other people saw them and loved them and wanted them. Yeah. Like, that's cool.
That is true.
Anyway, so that's my dad's story.
How about you, Haley? Well, you got some dad news for us?
I do. I have a little bit of dad news. So speaking of woodworking, I guess. I think I mentioned in the last episode that my dad has recently retired and that his big plan is to build a wood shop. And so he's the sort of guy, and my dad's name is Jim, by the way, so we've got all of the single syllable Midwestern dad names covered. So he's the kind of guy who he needs to be doing something. Like, he's always busy, he's always got projects going, and he's been in a career that had a lot of things going all the time for a very, very long time at this point. And so he knew that when he was getting ready to retire, that one of the things that he needed to plan for was something to do. Like, he needed to give himself an occupation instead of suddenly finding himself retired and having all this time on his hands.
Yeah.
And so for, I don't know, probably the last year or maybe couple of years, he's been planning this wood shop that he's going to put in his backyard. And instead of building it, maybe to the disappointment of Heidi's dad, he has decided to go with one of those prefabricated sheds that you can get that you can also insulate and have electricity running to them. Because the whole point of this wasn't necessarily to build the wood shop. It was more to, like, design the inside of the wood shop and make it the workshop of his dreams, basically. And he inherited a shopsmith from his dad. And so the centerpiece of this shopsmith, and I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with those, they are, like, one of the original, like, multi-tool power tools, and so you can switch out different parts to turn it into different kinds of saws and different things like that. But it's a large tool. And so he's basically making a home for this beautiful tool that he inherited from his dad, and he's going to spend time in his retirement figuring out what kinds of things he likes to make with wood and restoring tools and doing things that make him excited and happy creatively in a way that he didn't necessarily get to do in his day job, although he loved his previous work with the state police as well. And so I'm just so excited for him because he's so excited to do it. And I can't wait until he gets everything sorted out and I get to go visit him and just hang out with my dad in his workshop. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Aww, that's so cool.
I love that. Oh, that's the dream, isn't it?
Exactly. I feel like he's just doing it so right. Yeah. Like, he gave it some thought, realized that he's not going to be happy unless he has stuff to do, and so he created stuff to do, but in such a relatable way for me, as I also make things and am incapable of not creating additional work for myself. I can't help myself, and I clearly come by that honestly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Relatable.
Very much so. Well, yeah. So as you were talking about this tool that your dad has inherited, Heidi and I both had crafting inheritances to discuss. And I have managed to, you know, we've talked about unfinished objects, UFOs, numerous times here. And because I don't have enough...
Because there's such shame. That's right.
Well, as if I don't have enough of my own, I apparently have ancestors who died in shame of their unfinished objects, which I know is going to happen to me someday. It's bound to happen. But...
You should leave an apology note with your will. I'm so sorry. But I feel so awful.
You're now responsible for finishing these things, because that's what happens when I get these projects that somebody had been making 20, 50, 100 years ago. I go, but it should be finished. This is like paying respect to them in this way, which is a really nice, impractical thought, right? Is that... Am I crazy to say that? They're beautiful things.
No.
And I feel like...
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, but...
and yet...
what? I can't finish my own stuff. What am I doing? But here's like a few things that I have, quote, inherited. Probably the most recent project is an Afghan that my grandma was knitting. She reached a point where she couldn't knit anymore. And so she just stopped and it was put away. And we tried to kind of encourage her to keep knitting, because that's obviously really good for older people to be doing. It keeps things active in their mind and their hands and all of those things. She made a number of this particular type of Afghan with this really soft Lion Brand yarn, because she was, you know, a fan of the Lion Brand. It's very nice. It's pretty. And it actually has held up really well in all of the ones that we have. So she probably completed 3 or 4 of this type of Afghan. And then now I've got like half of one in a bag. All of the yarn is there. And I know that if I pick it up to try and finish it, which I would love to do because it was my grandma, it was my nanny, and I miss her dearly.
Aww.
And, you know, that would be a really good thing to do. But I know I won't be able to match her gauge. I know for a fact I won't be able to. Do I just bind it off? Do I try to finish it? I can't even remember how big it is. So that's one of them. If we step back a little bit further in time, an older project that I received is a ton of granny squares not joined together, which is obviously my least favorite part to do. So, confession.
Oh, I love joining? Doing that. Yes. It's so soothing.
I don't know.
I can't.
Oh, you don't have to think about it. You just, oh.
You're crazy.
Yes.
I can't remember if the ends are woven in or not.
Okay, I don't want to weave in ends. I just want to join.
Confession, I actually donated that unfinished project. I felt really guilty, but it was one of those things where I went, this one, I can't deal with. So I passed that on, which was hard to do, but I did it.
Oh, good for you. Someone else will be able to do something interesting with that, or make a bunch of coasters.
Yeah, a lot of coasters. It was enough to make a whole giant Afghan, which was, I thought...
So a banquet of coasters.
My hope is that, exactly. My hope is that somebody found those and treasures them. Then...
Yeah.
You have made someone's DIY wedding
exactly. My thoughts, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Because you know how much those would sell for on Etsy? Way more.
Well, now you're telling me.
Oh, yeah.
I should
have sold them. Oh, well. It was hopefully a kind thought. Anyway, then I have these. Have you seen that tool? It's called a Weave It. And you just like weave little squares from it. It's a old style tool, but I'm going to talk about something similar later on because there's some cool stuff that you can do with it. So there's a ton of these little squares in kind of pinkish range of shades, some like deeper wine color, some a little bit more with an orangey cast. And because of how the process of these, you know, works, they're a little bit thinner. Again, they all have to be joined, but that one has just always struck me as a favorite. Like, I remember it being in my grandma's basement in a drawer, and you'd open up the drawer and here were all these little squares, and I found it fascinating. So I've held on to those. Maybe someday I'll finish them. Maybe someone else will get them.
Oh.
Those are kind of cool.
Do you know what would be fun with those? Joining them with bobbin lace. Like giant bobbin lace in between them.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So I just really like joining things. Never mind. Carry on.
Okay. So now I know I'm going to like just pack all of those with me. The next time I take a trip to New York, I'm bringing them all with me. And I'm going to sit down in your... in your craft studio with you, and you're going to just start showing me how to join these. And I'll leave them there. You can finish the project and mail it back to me. No.
I was going
to
say, you're not bringing them home, are you?
All right. No. But my favorite like unfinished objects that I have received from women in my family line are some really cool quilt blocks that were all mm-hmm. well preserved in. I have several different styles, including extra fabric that was there to be making more of the blocks. And there's one that it's a Dresden block, and included with it,
cool. There's
the wooden Dresden template that I think my great grandfather made for my great grandmother to make. And I was actually named after her. Aww. So that's like, that's a treasure. And one of those things that needs to be something special. Like it needs to be finished. And how perfect that I'm named after her. So, and yet I haven't touched them, but they're all carefully wrapped in a box. And yeah, it's kind of cool.
Oh, I love that.
That's so nice.
It is so nice. And that's the thing, like, with all of these things that you inherit from, especially as craft supplies, it's so hard because it does come with its own weight of responsibility. Yeah. Like, if you've got any kind of, like, love for a craft or empathy as a human, like, there's a responsibility there. And I think that's why, like, I've done in the past year, I've gotten two or three emails, some comments, and even this week, which kind of inspired this whole discussion we're having, one of my mom's sisters called, my Aunt Rita, and she was like, hey, my sister-in-law passed, and she was a big crafter, and I have no idea what to do with all this.
Yeah.
And while there's, like, emotion there, there's a lot of stuff. Like, I don't want to air the recently departed's, like, craft hoard in too much detail.
Craft dirty laundry.
But, I mean, there's everything from hundreds of skeins of yarn to unopened craft kits to partially completed craft kits. And I was just like, I told my aunt, I was like, don't judge her too harshly, though, because that's going to be me, hopefully, in several decades. And she was just like, I just don't know what to do. Like, my aunt's not the most online person in the world. And she was just like, needed some direction on what to do with this stuff.
Yeah, my aunt passed away last fall. And one of the first things that I told my cousin is she has a huge stash of fabric and some really fantastic sewing machines. They have high value. So don't just start getting rid of things. Like, just like... Yes, mm-hmm. it's going to be overwhelming, but like pause before you do anything with that. Not because I need it or want it, but just like realize that's.
Yeah.
Because it needs to go somewhere with someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And that's my aunt Rita. Hey, Rita, if you're listening. she's a knitter. She made all of her nieces and nephews a full Afghan. She would knit us each an Afghan for our high school graduation. But she also, like, does not need that much yarn just for herself. You know, she's got her own stash. She's got her own projects. But she is a savvy enough crafter to be like, I just know that if I straight up donated this, it might not end up with somebody who could use this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what, donate. Like, I was like, I won't even make you say it. You can actually make money on some of this stuff. And you're doing a lot of labor in terms of, like, cleaning out a human's house. Like, that's a lot of work. Like, I've had to help in that process within the past year. And it's not only really intense, it's a lot of time and work. And so the biggest tips I shared with her that I think are valuable to share here, since the people listening to this podcast are probably also people who have been given the deceased craft leavings. Some of them better than others.
Yes.
And especially if you're given, like, someone who's relatively, like, a stranger to you, it's a lot harder to justify hanging on to some random person's yarn from their estate sale than it is to hang on to your grandma's Afghan. Like, it's just a lot. Anyway, so what I told my aunt was eBay, eBay, eBay. Like, if you can get on to eBay, and figure out how to list something and take a decent looking picture of it. That's a great way to get those items out there in front of people.
And people who want them.
And there's people who go on eBay who are on a budget or just looking for like a vintage craft supply that you can't get anymore. Like I used to go on eBay looking for macrame cord before macrame got really big again. Specifically, there's this stuff called elephant cord, and it's made out of 100% quote textured Herculon. Mm. All I know is it's plastic.
Herculon.
All I know is it's plastic, and I can cut it with a lighter.
Ah.
Yeah. And so I've gotten like a set of like a lot of 10 matching skeins of that for various craft experiments. I digress again. Sorry, guys. But there's people who search eBay for things like even just Red Heart yarn, because you can get it for less than it would retail at these days.
And or if you're looking for, like, if you need, like, another fat quarter of fabric in a pattern that simply does not exist or is sold out.
Yeah.
Like, people are always looking for specific things.
Yeah. And even one of the things I get a kick out of, like if I go on eBay sometimes to scope out the craft supply section, are colorways that were like produced as very much part of like a trend or a moment in the 60s or 70s. And they're like these electric greens and a lot of orange. And I get a kick out of looking at those. And sometimes I buy them just because you can't really find textured Herculean yarn at the store these days.
Give it time. It could come back.
And it could. We're going to bring it back.
Hashtag bring back Herculean.
And then the other thing I told her was if you're really overwhelmed and you just don't want to deal with eBay, just try to be kind of thoughtful about where you donate stuff. I mean, stuff at Goodwill can end up on the shelf. But it's kind of the fate of these materials could be up to the mercy of whatever person's doing the sorting of donations that day. And if, like, the matching set of knitting needles aren't taped together, one of them might get lost and it's kind of useless. Or they might just get wadded up and, I don't know, or just tossed because somebody might literally not know what a knitting needle is, depending on who the person is. So there's nothing gone wrong with Goodwill, but those are, like, the worst case scenarios that can happen. But some other things to consider that I remember when I was a public librarian on the south side of Chicago for years, we didn't always have money for supplies in our budget. And so I was always really grateful when we got especially craft supplies donated, because that meant that I could do programming for like all of my summer reading time on those like July and August doldrum days where the kids have been there every day, 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and they're so bored. It can result in some really cool programs. And then if they're donated and a kid's like, I want to learn knitting because they're awesome, I could send them home with a whole skein of yarn and be like, if it doesn't come back, it's not the end of the world. But like, it'd be tight if you could bring it back, whatever you don't use, so another kid could use it.
Yeah.
So my list of places to think of including, and I'll put this in the show notes too, are public libraries, schools, churches, other summer programs, like stuff that might be local to you, like that might be grant funded or independently funded, or even the park district. Like for during the school year, especially, there's a lot of independent after school programs like the Boys and Girls Club. And in Chicago, we have a program called After School Matters for teens. They do a lot of really cool work. And then another couple of places to keep in mind, especially, are senior centers. Because I know at my grandma's assisted living, there's a craft group that meets, and they always need more yarn, and a lot of what they do is charity knitting. So things like Little Hats, Big Hearts, the American Heart Association, knitted knockers, which are where you knit or crochet a breast form to donate to people who've undergone mastectomies. Yeah, there's endless yarn-related charities, too, if you're specifically looking at a set of over 100 skeins of yarn that you've got on your hands to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Have I missed anything on off the top of your guys' heads that might be a good donation idea?
No, I think that's good. I know that there are, in larger cities, there are sometimes organizations that are almost like art supply banks where teachers and educators can go if they happen to have the right credentials and get donated items and such. So there are things like that. I'm not sure how much that exists in smaller cities, but there are definitely things like that in New York.
Yeah. And I think in Chicago, there's one called the Waste Shed, and their mission is like to make things more eco-friendly. And so they gladly take donations of stuff that could otherwise end up in the landfill. And it's big for teachers and librarians.
The other thing I was thinking about with this is it's helpful to ask a person, like ask a contact person from an organization, is this the type of thing that you would be interested in? Because, you know, you don't want to burden them with something if you could just make an extra phone call and find another person that was actively seeking something.
Yeah, that's very true. Because not every librarian was
exactly.
Me.
So one place might go, oh my gosh, bags and bags of fabric scraps. This is exactly what we've been looking for. And another place would be like, what are we going to do with this? And then it ends up just getting wasted anyway. So just like a quick phone call to say, these are the kinds of things I have. That goes a long way.
Absolutely.
And also make that phone call, maybe not on the day that all the kids are off school and your local library branch only has three total people working, or maybe don't make it at like 5 minutes to close on a Saturday or like right after school. That'd be great. Because that always happened. And I was like, I'll call you back.
Definitely be thoughtful in how you give and what you give.
Yeah.
Because it's not helpful to anybody if you're just adding stress.
Totally.
And I mean, if you can separate things, even if you're not, although if you're listening to us, you probably are a crafter. But even if you're dealing with items that are not your kind of craft, you can probably identify them and like put all of that stuff in one bag at least. Like there are lots of ways to make it just a little bit easier for the things that you ideally would like to get used by someone to be useful to them. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I was going to talk about last minute sewing, and I just don't feel like that makes a whole lot of sense for this particular episode. So I'm going to talk about objects I inherited.
All right,
too.
Yay!
because boy, do I have a lot of them. My grandmother is, saying that she's preparing to die is not exactly correct because she's, like, healthy and spry and, like, bouncing around, but she is preparing to not be, to not leave an undue burden on her family when, at some point, it is time for her to pass away.
Good for her. And I'm just going to say that right now. I hope to be that person one day.
Like, it's incredibly smart, but it also means that things show up at my apartment. Now, she's a Midwestern grandmother and has never been to my apartment in New York City. She truly does not understand about how little space there is in my apartment, and also that it was built before closets existed. Like, these are just not things that exist in my world. The ceilings are super high, so that's great, but there's not a lot of storage options. So I will frequently receive shipments of whatever is the current bee in her bonnet. So all of the, maybe you guys also have experienced this. You know the, like, old cookie tins that used to be a really big thing for holiday gatherings or whatever?
Yes.
And then everybody would then repurpose these large, almost hat box size cookie tins for their sewing equipment. At least that is how it happened in my family. Everyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you seen, there's an enamel pin of a cookie tin with craft supplies in it.
No, I have not. But yes, so this isn't just me. So one day, a few years ago, I came home to this gigantic package. And I opened it, and inside were all of the cookie tins that are holding the various sewing supplies that belong to my grandmother. And clearly she has decided she's never using this stuff again, because she is a very skilled sewist and knitter and embroiderer, but I think that she only did it because she was supposed to do it. Like, she doesn't, the love isn't there. And so I think this was like a farewell and good riddance sort of thing for my grandmother to send me these things. And also my mother did the same thing. And so I have all of these cookie tins filled with, like, I think it's about a 5-to-1 or maybe even 10-to-1 ratio of junk to, huh, that's cool. which, honestly, if any of us look through our sewing supplies, that would be the case, I think. But so there are these amazing, like, atomic age sets of sewing needles, you know, how sewing needles used to come in these little cardboard folded over cards, and they had really interesting printing on them, or sometimes they were advertisements or whatever. So I have some really cool atomic age needle cards that are like have rockets all over them, and that stuff was definitely in there, along with once chrome plated scissors that weren't even very good to begin with, that now what do I do with this nonsense? And so inherited craft supplies are certainly an adventure. And I would just like to encourage everyone to, yes, donate when you're able and when people are looking for it, and sell if you can, because that's great. But also throw away or recycle the stuff that's actually crap. Maybe don't keep it in your own sewing studio forever, just because, I mean, if you have an actual emotional attachment, great. But if you'll just feel kind of guilty for getting rid of a thing that belonged to someone else, oh goodness, just toss it. Because then your children are going to have to deal with that. And like, you don't want to inflict that upon others. See, also, don't donate your moths.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it because we have all heard my tale of the mothing. Do not donate your moths to people. Nobody wants your moths. If you've got perfectly good yarn that looks a little chewed on, it is no longer perfectly good yarn. Get rid of it. Burn it with fire if you can. If you have a container where you could safely do that instead. And then it'll be both fun and also not giving anyone moths.
Never,
no moths.
Never was there a tale of more woe than of Haley and her mothios.
Oh, but it's so true.
It's so true.
That was such a classy way to end a podcast. See you later, ladies.
Yeah, have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast. Be sure to visit veryseriouscrafts.com for show notes, serious social media links, and more.